This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Knowledgeable.
Listen, here's what's wrong with your hypothesis, your theorem, your supposition, your postulate.
Honest.
If that front ain't in gangsta, your back end won't be able to show its full potential.
Understanding.
You're going to suck. You're going to suck for the next couple of years.
Passionate.
I'm all over social media. I live it.
This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hashtag facts.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
Mahomes has hit his last 8. Looking to the end zone for the win. He caught it. Ball game. Chiefs to the championship game.
I was so hoping, Brendan, so hoping that the ball moved, maybe hit the ground. I wanted more. I wanted more. And you're not going to hear on this show any complaining about the overtime rules. All right? You have to score a touchdown. You got to get a stop there, or you got to get a stop with 13 seconds to go in regulation. What a game. What a weekend. But really, what a game. I think it'll go down, and this is the second time I've said this now, in 2 weeks. Because 2 weeks ago, on the Monday morning following the final regular season game of the season, the Raiders-Chargers game, and I said we get caught up as kind of creatures of recency in wanting to say, we saw it, we were there for it, the worst ever, the greatest ever. But I really felt like that Raiders-Chargers game would stand the test of time, that that would be a game, and I still believe that, that that will be a game that we will never, ever forget, the way, the context around that game, the both teams tying to make the postseason, the loser goes home, the winner goes on, the nature of the overtime, the Justin Herbert performance. He didn't even make the postseason, and he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. And then we had what we had this weekend, but really what we had last night. Because in the final game of the 4 divisional round games played on the weekend of January 22nd, January 23rd, 2022, the final game of that weekend will go down as one of the greatest NFL postseason games in history, and certainly one of the greatest finishes of final 2 minutes in NFL postseason history. Now, I get caught up in this stuff, and I know many of you don't, and many of you do, and that's fine. But this is my show. I get caught up in the moment of really enjoying what I just saw, sort of really bathing in the aftermath of what I just saw, but then starting to think back to, well, what was better? For me, number one all time, the greatest football game start to finish I have ever watched in my lifetime of watching football with big stakes is the 1982, January 1982, the 1981 season playoffs between the Dolphins and the Chargers, the epic in Miami. 41-38 went to a second overtime. It was a 24-0 lead by the Chargers early. It was one of those incredible back and forth, 24-0 game over. Nope, here come the Dolphins. They cut it to 7 at halftime with the hook and ladder to Tony Nathan. And then the Dolphins take the lead. Then the Chargers come back and tie it. And then you had the epic overtime in which Kellen Winslow needed to be helped off the field multiple times in the heat of the Orange Bowl. But he blocked a field goal when he could barely breathe. And then eventually Rolf Benerska ended it in the second overtime in one of the most just physically draining games I've ever watched. And that was for me, let alone the players. Last night's Kansas City-Buffalo 42-36 overtime game is right there with it. And there are a lot of them. And we could do that someday down the road. But that game last night was one of the greatest games of all time, certainly in the postseason. And really the finish, the final 2 minutes of that game, really would be hard to ever be matched. 25 points in the final 2 minutes of regulation. That's the most ever in a playoff game. The second most in NFL history. It's only been done once in regulation. Mahomes and Allen combined to go 15 of 20 for 290 yards, 4 touchdowns in just the final 2 minutes and the overtime. Really one of the more incredible games with so much strategy to discuss. The kickoff after the touchdown drive that gave Buffalo seemingly the win, and Josh Allen, hero status, elevating him, by the way, into the category, if you didn't think he was there already, with Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, who lost this weekend. And then to have Mahomes say, not so fast, with a kickoff that brought a lot of questions and maybe the biggest trend on Twitter this morning, hashtag squib. And then how the hell did Travis Kelce get that wide open for a 25-yard gain? They weren't talking about a 48-yard field goal to tie the game. You were contemplating the possibility of Ken Butker kick one from 60 or 62 if they can get to that point. Yeah, they got 14, 12, 10 yards in front of where they thought they'd be able to get. What a finish. What a game. The Chiefs 42, the Bills 36, in an overtime NFL playoff classic. It's amazing to think that the Rams nearly blew a 27-3 lead. Well, they did blow it. A 27-3 lead. Win on a last walk-off field goal. And by far and away, not even close, it was the worst of the two games. As Brady and a bunch of wild turnovers allowed Tampa to tie that game with under a minute to go. And that followed, of course, Saturday and Saturday night's two classics where you got two walk-off field goals to win. The third, a walk-off field goal. We had four games end on the final play of the game with walk-off scores. If you were looking for an improvement from last weekend's super wild card game, or super wild card weekend, you got it with one of the greatest divisional round weekends in the history of the sport. I can only imagine how many people were watching these games all weekend long. I think I saw on Friday after the show that the Cowboys 49ers game from last week, which was one of only two competitive games, I think drew nearly 50 million eyeballs. Is that true, Brendan? I think somebody sent that to me. It became the highest rated wild card weekend game in like 10 years. Not a surprise. Not a surprise at all. 41.5 million.
Yeah, I think it peaked at 50 million for the finale.
It peaked at 50 million. What do we think the game did last night? With it extending into prime time.
70 million.
Well, now we're getting into, you know, not Super Bowl territory, but like the runner-up to any Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
So much to get to. We'll go game by game. And I think we will, given the hour of the morning, maybe save this best for last. But let me start off our Monday morning, January 24th, with a couple of what do you gots.
All right, all right, all right.
What do you got?
A programming note. On Wednesday, we will have guests. And I'm working on some big ones. We'll see whether or not I can come through, or Brendan can come through. But 2 days from today, January 26th, 2022, is the actual 30-year anniversary of the Washington Redskins' 1991 season Super Bowl. The last time, really, this organization was relevant. 3 decades ago. Now, the following year, they got back to the divisional round and were very close to making it back to the NFC Championship game as the defending champions. But really, as we all know, it's been pretty much in the dark since. But we will reminisce on Wednesday's show about the 30 years ago on Wednesday Super Bowl win over the Buffalo Bills. Who would have guessed that 30 years later you would be talking about just 3 playoff wins and never, never even sniffing, really, the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. 1992, the following year was close to the NFC title game. And in 2000, the 1999 season, it was kind of close. As the sports talk show in this fair city that has promised to keep you up to date on all of the snow possibilities, which, of course, last Monday, Brendan, I believe we were talking about a potential massive storm over the weekend, which, of course, did not materialize. And we just didn't. This is what happens. These extended forecasts and the reliability of these extended forecasts are, you know, 1 in 4, really. Anything past 6 days is like a 25% hit rate. But let me just tell you that all of the models overnight and early this morning are pointing to the chance of a significant snowstorm Friday night, Saturday of this coming week. Very cold again. My God, when the Friday here, when I left the studio Friday after the podcast, that was, I think, it felt like the coldest day of the year. And it probably was. I think we only got into the 20s. We've got a couple of those days, by the way, this week. Very cold days. A couple of decent days. Like, tomorrow's going to be a decent day. Then we're back into the 20s on Wednesday, low 30s Thursday, and then legitimate chance for a storm right now, Friday night, Saturday time frame. I'll keep you posted on that throughout the week. I'm sure you're excited about that. Another what do you got? So Al Michaels did an interview with Bob Costas for Costas's new HBO show, which I've not watched. I don't know how new it is. It's called Back on the Record with Bob Costas. Now, I believe it follows the Bill Maher show on Friday nights. I believe that's true. I don't know. That would be an 11 o'clock start on Friday night. But anyway, I read this. I did not see this. But Al Michaels and Bob Costas got into a conversation about legalized sports betting. Kind of a conversation that we've had. Brendan and I have kind of had off the cuff. I've had maybe a little bit more substantially. And that is kind of this thought from a lot of the just recently initiated, you know, the novices, the sports gambling novices. I put a lot of and chalk a lot of the discussion about sports gambling since it's been legalized into the category of naivete. Like, I don't think that either, like, I think Ted Leonsis is either outrageously disingenuous or he's just naive when he talks about the data and the advantages that bettors have because of analytics and because of information and because, you know, all of his smart former AOL people are all going to break Vegas, or they're going to break, you know, legalized sports betting. And as I've said to you many times before, sports betting is lots of fun. It's lots of fun. But for those of us that have been doing this for not just years, but decades, we understand the pitfalls. It is a risky business. It damages a lot of lives. And I'm not here to lecture about, oh, I'm against sports gambling. I'm not. I think it should be a taxable thing. But I think some of the people that go on the record as, you know, supposed responsible people in the community to say this could actually be a career for some of you, it's not going to be a career for any of you. It is a diversion. It's a way to increase the entertainment value for sports. And if you treat it that way with a budget, with an amount of money that you can afford to lose and you've got the discipline, it's great. Just like when you go to Vegas or you go to Atlantic City, if you're one of those people that say, I'm bringing this amount of money and this is what I can afford to lose, and if I lose it, that's it. I'm just going to enjoy, hang out with the guys, drink some free beers, and, you know, go to the buffets and walk around the strip. That's great. A lot of people can't do that. A lot of people continue to go to the ATM, or a lot of people continue to tell their marketing rep at, you know, the Venetian, hey, Kathy, I need a little bit more of extended credit. Bob Costas had Al Michaels on the show, and Al Michaels said the following. He basically said, don't gamble. And he said it this way, quote, as much information as we have, meaning the announcers, and collect and have access to and watch film and all the rest and meet with the coaches and the quarterbacks, I don't know who's going to win the game. And if I had to make my living betting, you might find me living under a freeway overpass. I know that because you can't beat it. You cannot beat it. So I think this legalized gambling now around the country, okay, you know, it's kind of fun. But I would hope that people don't bet the mortgage money and the rent money and the food money and the kids' education money on it. I mean, it's one thing to bet $50 on a game and, you know, have a little fun. But this, if this becomes your life, good luck. Yeah, of course. But then he said something else. And I thought this was disingenuous. I could be wrong. Michael said, quote, I've never personally bet on games. I've never done it before. It was fun being the rascal, he said, in talking about gambling on the air as an announcer for many years. You know, there have been several who have done it. Michaels and Brent Musburger, really, I think, Brendan, and maybe there are others, but I think they're the two that, and my friend Scott Van Pelt, but not in terms of play-by-play announcer. But I think that in terms of play-by-play guys calling games, they're the two that are memorable for always talking about the point spread long before the league wanted it discussed. And in fact, the league kind of frowned on that kind of discussion. And Michaels told Costas in this interview, quote, I've never personally bet on games, but it was fun being the rascal. There's no question about it. I can still be a bit of a rascal. But now everybody knows you can mention certain things you couldn't a few years ago. A lot of people used to think, oh, he must have money on that game, but I didn't. Because the thing I love about sports is that you don't know what's going to happen. I think anybody that was talking about the point spreads, like Brent Musburger and Al Michaels, I think they were betting. That would be my guess. I think that's not true. I don't believe him when he says he's never bet on a game before. I just don't believe that. By the way, the Michaels-Collinsworth pairing, and I used to be a big Al Michaels fan, the Michaels-Collinsworth pairing might have been the worst of the weekend from my standpoint. I think by far and away now, Nance and Romo have moved ahead of the four number one crews. All right, the Monday night group, which you could put, I guess, near the bottom. Collinsworth, and Michaels, Aikman, and Buck. By the way, with in the game that they called yesterday afternoon between the Rams and the Bucks, they couldn't really figure out. I shouldn't say they. Michaels figured it out. Collinsworth couldn't. Collinsworth, on the Rams' last drive when they were up 27-20 before the Cam Akers fumble, had the Buccaneers getting the ball back at the two-minute warning. And Michaels had to correct him to say, well, if they run the football, the second down play is going to get the clock to the two-minute warning. And then if they run it again, then the Bucs aren't going to get the ball back until about a minute 20 left with no timeouts after a punt. Of course, Collinsworth, Mr. Analytics, Mr. Pro Football Focus owner, couldn't figure that out in crunch time. You got to be able to do that. I understand people get a little bit mixed up with the numbers, and maybe the numbers aren't Collinsworth's strength, and that's why he bought Pro Football Focus. But when you're the lead analyst on a game, one of the things you got to nail in a one-score game with 3 minutes and 20 seconds to go is you got to be able to do the math that says with no timeouts left, you're not getting the ball back with 2 minutes to go if they run it twice and they manage their clock properly. Of course, the Ndamukong Suh made a great play on Cam Akers. And that was one of those wow moments of a wow weekend. It really was. We've got our Window Nation Twitter poll up. Go to at Kevin Sheehan DC. Brendan will retweet it from the Team 980. Team 980's Twitter handle and account. The offseason priority for the Washington football team should be, and I gave you four options, another wide receiver, a middle linebacker, a starting guard, because Brandon Scherff more likely than not going to leave, with some offensive line depth. I put that as an option. And then other was the fourth category. After this weekend of great wide receiver play and great defense, great pass rush, really good offensive line play, which of those three do you think is the top priority? Or is it other? Some of you are taking this seriously. Actually, most of them are, Brendan. But go ahead and vote. Off-season priority for the Washington football team should be. That is my Window Nation Twitter poll of the day. Window Nation's virtual home show extravaganza sale is back. Get two free windows with every two you buy. No down payment, no payments, and no interest for two full years. You'll save thousands. All right, up next, we start the process of going through them one at a time. We'll start with the first one. It was a beauty. How many times do you get sacked 9 times in a game and still win? That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
The snap, the put down, the swing of the right leg.
Yeah, baby.
It's on its way.
Yeah, baby.
It is good.
Yeah.
Coffin nails.
Bam, bam, bam. That is unbelievable. 54 and 52 at the gun. That is unrealism right there. And the Bengals advance to the Final Four. AFC Championship game, Dan. AFC Championship game.
Cincinnati Bengals radio with the call of Mr. McPherson's game winner for what was a 19-16 Bengals divisional round win. They get the rematch with the Chiefs. They are 7-point underdogs Sunday at Arrowhead in the first of the two championship games. That game is a 3:05 kick on CBS, and then you get the NFC title game for the third time this year, the Rams and the 49ers. You get that one at 6:30 on Fox, and that line is 3.5. All right, the Rams are 3.5-point favorites in the championship game over the 49ers. A game, by the way, on that final Sunday of the season when we had in the 1 o'clock window the fantastic Ravens-Steelers finish, then in the late afternoon window the Rams-49ers finish, with the 49ers basically on the verge of being knocked out of the playoffs before Jimmy G led him on an 88-yard touchdown game-tying drive that forced overtime with no timeouts in the final minute and a half. And here they are in a rematch with the Rams. And the Rams are going to have to do something, by the way, to keep the 49er fans out of there, because that final regular season game at SoFi that the 49ers had to win to get into the postseason, and the Rams thought they were going to have to win the division. Now, they ended up winning the division because Seattle lost to Arizona at the same time. But that was a home 49ers crowd at SoFi in Southern California. Chiefs, 7-point favorites over the Bengals. The Rams, 3.5-point favorites over the 49ers. The AFC game is the first game on Sunday. Weather right now is supposed to be in the 40s and clear at Arrowhead. And, of course, it'll be gorgeous at SoFi in L.A. for the nightcap. All right, what we're going to do is we're going to go through these games one at a time. And we will do it chronologically. And we will start with the first game of the weekend, which was the Cincinnati Tennessee game. Tennessee, the number one seed, as it turns out, both of the teams that had a bye as the number one seeds, both of those teams went down. Cincinnati wins it 19-16 on a walk-off field goal at the gun by Evan McPherson, the rookie kicker from Florida. He kicked four on the day, and by the way, two of them were from 50 yards out plus. He hit the game winner from 52, also hit one late in the first half from 54. All right, on the Cincinnati-Tennessee game, I want to start with this. Ryan Tannehill made one really good throw in the game. One. The touchdown throw to A.J. Brown, back shoulder to tie the game in the third quarter at 16-16. But oh my God, did he make game-killing, back-breaking, season-ending throws, and because of it, the Titans are home. That's your number one takeaway from Tennessee-Cincinnati. I'll get to Joe Burrow here in a moment. Ryan Tannehill wasn't good enough. He cost his team dearly. Personally, I thought that they put the ball into his hands on a couple of plays where they should have kept running the football, but I think after reading a little bit after the game, some of those were checks by Tannehill, runs to throws. The first play of the game, he throws an interception. Bad throw. At 16-6, they drive all the way down the field, on the ground, and on a first down bubble attempt, it gets deflected up into the air and picked off. And then with the chance to get into field goal range in a tie game with 25 seconds left in regulation, he throws to a receiver that seemed to be covered by no less than three defenders, maybe four. Just an awful decision. His three interceptions, his poor decision, by the way, on a third and one to keep it on a read option instead of leaving the ball in the gut of Derrick Henry, along with other poor decisions and bad plays, cost Tennessee a chance to move on and win that game. Because defensively, they were good enough, more than good enough. From a running the ball standpoint, Derrick Henry, I think, looked a lot like Derrick Henry. I mean, ultimately, it was 20 for 62, I understand that, and Foreman was like four carries for 64 yards or something like that, but they averaged over 5 yards a carry on the ground. Ryan Tannehill is the biggest takeaway from game number one. He was dreadful. Now I move on to Joe Burrow. God, I love Joe Burrow. I saw some of you saying that Washington should have been aggressive and, you know, Cincinnati wasn't trading away that number one pick. They weren't trading away the chance to draft Joe Burrow. Are you insane?
Their GM has openly talked about how they got offers for that pick and they turned down over three first-round picks.
I mean, there was no chance. Of course I would have drafted Joe Burrow had he fallen to number two. Of course, and I said it in the moment back then, I would have endorsed a big trade to move up to take him. Joe Burrow was sacked nine times in the game by one of the better pass rushes I've seen all year. And you knew that was going to be an advantage for Tennessee going into the game. Their D-line versus Cincinnati's O-line. He still made every big play, every big throw. He had a huge third down run on early in the third quarter on their opening drive of the third quarter in a 9-6 game that preceded the Mixon cutback touchdown run that gave Cincinnati a 16-6 lead. He was money. Not one major mistake on a day when the opposing defense would have made 75% or more of the quarterbacks in the league cower and die. What a pass rush Tennessee had, and what a cool, calm, smart, and capable answer Joe Burrow had at almost every turn. He made one play in the game I know that he'd love to have back. And that was the third down sack he took with 3 minutes to go in the game when they were in field goal range in a tie game 16-16. You know, that was the one play. You know, I'd also add on their first drive, he took a sack that would have led to a long field goal attempt on a third down, but they got bailed out because of a delay of game penalty. The sack that he took with 3 minutes to go, it was a six-man pass rush that did drop two after they showed six-man pass rush against an empty set. You've got to understand that the unblocked is your responsibility as a quarterback, and the ball's got to get out to the hot receiver, period. I don't think he saw it. I think that's the one play in the game. I'm sure there are others. They'll look at the film and say, I could have avoided that sack. But my God, of the nine sacks, I don't think he had a chance on seven of them. 348 passing yards on a day in which he was under siege like you rarely see in an NFL game. One interception on a deflection on a ball that Pirine, that would be Samaje, our Pirine, couldn't handle. His throw to Chase after the last Tannehill interception to get into field goal range was perfect. I saw his QBR number, which was 28. And I'm telling you, Brendan, it made me want to completely discount that ESPN QBR number in the future. I thought he was exceptional. I thought the end of the first half told you pretty much what Zach Taylor thinks of his second-year quarterback. It's a 9-6 game, right? Cincinnati's up 9-6. They're going to get the ball to start the second half from their own 18-yard line against that defense that had already sacked him five times, and he's got him dropping back to try to get down the field. And even on third and six, from their own 22-yard line, they could have run it and let the clock run out, gone to halftime, gotten the ball back to start the third quarter up 9-6. I mean, the chances at that point, third and six from your own 22, that you're going to get in field goal range, less than 50%. And he had Burrow still throwing the football. He completed that one for a first down. Now, they did not get into field goal range. They didn't get points, which ultimately kind of proved my initial gut on that, which was I'd take this one to halftime. I would not drop this guy back another time in this half with this field position and a 9-6 lead and going to get the ball to start the third quarter. But that just shows you the trust that they have in him. I think there were very few quarterbacks in the league that would have delivered what he delivered in that game. Now, we saw several of the other quarterbacks. I mean, we saw the quarterbacks that played the rest of the weekend, a lot of them anyway, that would have delivered in that game. But Burrow against Mahomes, after seeing Allen against Mahomes, can't wait for that one. You do know that Burrow and Mahomes faced off just a few weeks ago. It was a game that Cincinnati had to have. And in that game, Mahomes and Burrow combined to throw for 705 yards and 6 touchdowns. Of course, last night, Mahomes and Allen combined for 707 yards and 7 touchdowns. So now we get Burrow against Mahomes. Also from the Cincinnati-Tennessee game, couple of other things. Let's go back to early in the game. It's 6-0. Tennessee scores a touchdown. There's a penalty that Tennessee decides to enforce and go for the two in a 6-6 game. I don't have a problem with them going for the two there after you get the ball to the 1 yard line. My one question on that play was, Derrick Henry just needed to reach the ball out and he would have gotten the 2 points. Like he got hit obviously at the 1 yard line. He was going down short, but it was like a reach out for an easy 2 point conversion, it seemed to me. I didn't know why he didn't do that. The kicker, Evan McPherson. The game winner was incredible. But how about the kick with a minute 40 to go in the first half from 54 yards out for a 9-6 lead? I thought that was a massive play in the game, because a miss and Tennessee's got field position. They got Tannehill, and maybe it doesn't work out, but they've got great field position to get into position to take a halftime lead. I loved that kick. I thought that was a massive play in the game. I thought he was crucial for the Bengals. Rookie kicker, has delivered all year long for them. The only drafted kicker, by the way, last year. And then, as they got into range after the throw to Chase, that had them, you know, in long field goal range. But still, I thought Cincinnati got kind of conservative. Burrow took that last snap, you know, and moved it to the part of the field that the kicker wanted and lost 2 yards on that play, which created a 52-yard field goal attempt. Apparently not a concern to Zach Taylor with this kicker. By the way, not a concern to McPherson either. This is what he said, apparently, to his team or to his holder or to somebody as he walked out onto the field on the road in a divisional playoff game with a 52-yard field goal to win it.
Oh, that guy's unbelievable. He said, so he was talking to Brandon as he was going out to kick. He gave a little warm-up swing, and he said, looks like we're going to the AFC Championship, right before he went out there to kick it. And when you have a kicker, I mean, we knew exactly what we had as soon as he walked into the building in camp, and we just saw how he carried himself. You know exactly how a kicker is going to perform when, obviously, everyone at this level can kick through the uprights, but it's how you handle yourself in the locker room that shows us that you have the confidence to go out there and make a kick like this and perform the way he did in a game like this. And we knew exactly what kind of guy we had in camp.
Unbelievable job by Evan McPherson in that game. He is now in 2 postseason games, 8-for-8 on field goals. He had 4 field goals in the wild card game against the Raiders and 4 field goals in the game against Tennessee. He hasn't missed a PAT either. He has been exceptional. The last field goal he missed came against Baltimore in a blowout win. More from this game. I thought Jeffrey Simmons, who's been one of my favorite players going back to his days at Mississippi State, he played, by the way, with Montez Sweat, on one of the better college defenses we've seen in the last 10 years. And, you know, he came out, there were some injuries, and he blew up, you know, a little bit last year, and then this year ended up having an all-pro season. I still think, by the way, John Allen deserved to be one of the 4 all-pro defensive tackles. Jeffrey Simmons, to me, looks like the next Aaron Donald. I think Aaron Donald's the best defensive player in recent memory. Certainly one of the better defensive players of all time. Jeffrey Simmons created mayhem in that football game. Now, their defense did in general. He ended up with 3 of the 9 sacks in the game and really forced at least 2 to 3 of the others with the immediate pressure, often after being double-teamed. He's a monster. Logan Wilson, the second-year linebacker out of Wyoming for the Bengals, what a good player he's turned into. The fourth down stop on Derrick Henry. The interception off the deflection at the end. Last thing from this game. I didn't think that the Amani Hooker interception should have stood based on what Sterator was saying. Now, I don't think Sterator said it so as definitively as he should have. I thought, personally, if the rule is that if the ball hits the ground simultaneously with the catch, even though there was total control over the ball, but the ball hitting the ground simultaneously then lends credence to the ground assisted the catch, whether it did or didn't. If the rule is that if it hits the ground simultaneously with control, that it's incomplete, I thought it should have been incomplete. Because I thought there was absolute conclusive video evidence that the ball hit the ground simultaneously with his hands around the ball. But whatever. What a performance by Joe Burrow in the face of one of the most relentless, overwhelming line of scrimmage differences we saw in a game this weekend. Cincinnati moving on with a 19-16 win over Tennessee. Up next, we'll keep our chronological countdown of the four divisional games. What came Saturday night, which for many of you was the biggest surprise of the weekend. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also on the Odyssey app. I do want to tell you about BetMGM. Bet on more than the final score with one-game parlay at BetMGM. One-game parlay is an exciting feature designed to help you make selections within a single game from over 400 bet types, including team and player props. Log into your BetMGM account and create your best parlay before the game starts. New to BetMGM? Sign up today and make your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. Use my bonus code for this one. It's Kevin S. You can place one-game parlay bets on football, basketball, and more. Plus, you'll earn M Life rewards that you can redeem for rooms and dining at MGM resorts nationwide. Try one-game parlay today. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Virginia only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. If you've got a gambling problem, 1-888-532-3500.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
It's a snap, high snap, placement made, kick end over end to the uprights, and it is good. The San Francisco 49ers advance.
This is the end of the game.
With a 13-10 victory over the Green Bay Packers on a 45-yard field goal by Robbie Gould as time expires. A gut-wrenching, heart-breaking defeat.
Obviously, Packers radio on the call. 13-10, the 49ers over the top-seeded, rested Green Bay Packers. Both of the number one seeds on Saturday losing home games after first-round byes. The Packers are out early again. This was the game that I said when we talked last week. Brendan and I did a segment, and I think we took calls on this as well. We said, is there any result this weekend that would truly be a surprise? And I said, no result's going to be truly a surprise. No Super Bowl matchup's going to be a massive surprise to me. But I said that the one that would surprise me the most would be if the Rams beat the Buccaneers, and they did. And you said, and most of the people agreed with you, if the 49ers beat the Packers. We're going through these games one at a time. We just finished going through Cincinnati's 19-16 walk-off field goal win over Tennessee. Now we get to the Saturday night game. And boy, if you are a Packers fan, just the sound, and you could feel it in the booth, the Green Bay booth, just the gut punch that was losing that game on Saturday night. This was a game that I never thought watching it at any moment from the beginning of the game on. I thought before the game San Francisco would have a chance. And by the way, the smell test, 0-3. All of my leans hit, the two unders on Saturday's games, and the Chiefs were the three leans, but the three selections were the two unders in the Sunday games and Tampa. Now, both of those games were basically a play away from finishing under, but they didn't. They didn't. The Saturday night game, until the 3rd-and-11 bomb at 10-10 on what would be Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay's last offensive snap. It was 3rd-and-11 from their own 27-yard line with about 3.5 minutes to go in the game. Until that moment, I didn't think there was any chance that San Francisco was going to win that game. And then when he threw deep, under pressure a little bit, to Devontae Adams, and essentially double covered, and the ball fell harmlessly to the turf, I was like, you know, the 49ers might be able to win this game. Because as bad as Garoppolo was for much of this game, this has happened to him before. He's had terrible games. Games that should have discounted by a factor of 100% the team's chance to win a game. And it hasn't in the past. And he, with the game on the line, has delivered. He did it in the final game of the season against the Rams. He did it when they had to have an 88-yard drive with no timeouts left and a minute and a half left, down 24-17 to keep their season alive. And he drove them 88 yards for the score. He did it in the Cincinnati game, where he drove them down the field for what turned out to be a missed field goal at the end of regulation, and then drove them down the field in overtime 75 yards after falling behind 23-20 in overtime to beat the Bengals 26-23. You know, Jimmy G is not the guy that I would want here. I think he totally is propped up by a phenomenal running game, a phenomenal offensive head coach, and a really good defense. But the bottom line is the dude has delivered in clutch moments several times this year. And he did it at the end. But I didn't think there was any chance until Rodgers was walking off the field in a 10-10 game, and they were coming on to punt the football, that the 49ers could win that game. That was one of the most improbable wins we've seen in a postseason game in a long time. Now, we'll get to the Tampa comeback against the Rams, because that, down 27-3, was improbable. This game was never more than a one-score game. Could have been a couple of times, but never was. The 49ers had negative 15 yards of total offense on the first four drives of the game offensively. They had at halftime 43 total yards and no points. 43 yards of offense in the first half. Jimmy Garoppolo only threw one interception in the game. But oh my God. I mean, I know that we have referred to that statistic, Brendan, that you've brought up several times during the year, the interceptable balls thrown that somebody, Pro Football Focus or somebody tracks, I forget who it is, and we did it because we wanted to see where Taylor Heinicke was on the list, because we felt like in so many of these games he threw balls that were up for grabs that could have gone the other way and didn't. And he was, what, second behind Roethlisberger, right, on interceptable balls during the season?
Yeah.
That was it, right? Second?
Yeah, he was second, a distant second, but he was second by himself.
Garoppolo in this game not only threw 4 to 5 passes that should have been intercepted, 2 or 3 of them should have been pick sixes. But again, more on him again about the last drive coming up in a moment. I know that it's really hard in a 60-minute game. By the way, in a game with brutal weather that turned really bad in the second half when the snow came in unexpectedly and turned the field into a bit of an ice rink. But I thought the Lewis fumble on the Packers' second drive of the game after they went down the field on the opening drive of the game to take a 7-0 lead against that defense, which, you know, was a little bit banged up coming in. Bosa was there and healthy and was awesome. But when they went the length of the field, a 70-yard drive, 10 plays, and A.J. Dillon unstopped, and it's 7-0, and then they get the ball back and they're on the move again, I was like, this is going to be a Packers night. I mean, and Lewis fumbled on a 1st-and-10 in San Francisco territory. And man, that was a big play. And you know what? Green Bay didn't do anything the rest of the night offensively. They had 70 yards on that opening drive. They were in the midst of a big time drive in San Francisco territory, starting from their own 25 on their second drive, with what you really felt like, if they go down here and score, Jimmy Garoppolo is not bringing him back from down 14-0, even though he brought him back against the Rams down 17-0, although it was the running game that did that. But you were involved in a game in that first half after that fumble that went San Francisco 3-and-out punt, Green Bay 3-and-out punt, San Francisco 3-and-out punt, Green Bay 3-and-out punt, San Francisco 3-and-out punt, Green Bay 6-and-out punt, and then you had the Garoppolo on the one drive where they moved the ball for positive yardage. Not an exaggeration, okay? San Francisco's first drive, minus 11 yards. Second drive, 0 yards. Third drive, minus 1 yard. Fourth drive, minus 3 yards. And then finally they got something going. And yes, there was a big drop on one of those drives by George Kittle. Understood. And then Garoppolo throws that horrendous interception with a minute to go in the first half with a chance to at least get three. Green Bay never did anything the rest of the way. Look, the special teams were killers in that game for the Packers. You had a blocked field goal and a blocked punt for a touchdown. Green Bay would have won that game with 13 points without those two plays on special teams. But the bottom line is, you can't score 10 points when you're Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers and expect anything other than the possibility, minimum, of losing the game. They weren't good offensively enough. Why weren't they good? Well, San Francisco is excellent defensively. Armstead and Bosa were awesome in the game. The pass rush was great. 5 sacks of Aaron Rodgers, 3 of them on third downs. The coverage was excellent after early in the game. Deebo Samuel was phenomenal, had a big kickoff return, and then that last run of 9 yards to get Gold into really good field goal range, incredible. Similar to the run, not same play, similar to the run that almost put the Dallas game away. The final drive by Garoppolo was outstanding. I mean, he throws multiple big balls to Kittle. Kittle for 12 yards. Then he finds Samuel for 14. And then you get Samuel running a little bit. And the 9-yard run was big. But the throw to Kittle to open that drive up was massive. And the throw to Samuel for 12 to 13 yards, massive. And then you get to the Rodgers legacy. I personally, as an NFL fan, look, if he's not going to come here, which I don't think he is, I'd love to see him back in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game. He's 12-10 in the postseason and has not been back to a Super Bowl since winning in 2009. And there have been heartbreaking losses and heartbreaking losses at home. And this was one of the all-time heartbreaking losses for them. Because I do not think in most situations, I think 90% of the time in a game like that, they come through. They had a block punt. They had a blocked field goal. And they had a crucial fumble early in the game. Because I think a 2-score lead at any point, they never got a 2-score lead. They had a chance. you know, at 7-0. They had a chance at 10-3 or at 7-3. But I thought a 2-score lead at any point in that game would have been game over. And you would have said, ooh, they struggled offensively, but they would have moved on. I give the 49ers all kinds of credit. They were awesome defensively. They were awesome on special teams. Thought it was interesting that Kyle Shanahan specifically told Buck and Aikman before the game, I think we have a big advantage on special teams and it may make the difference. He was prophetic on that front. All right, let's get to the two games from yesterday. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show and the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.